Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Sam, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's workshop update on T-cell lymphoma. Today's program is a collaborative effort between the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care. And we also have a number of other cancer organizations that have worked with us to help to spread the word about this program as well. Now, we have today on the program over 462 participants. So this is a very large call, and you come from all over the United States, from all different parts of the United States. And we also have international participants from Brazil, Canada, and the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world, and it's a credit to you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. Now, today's program is supported through unrestricted educational grants to the Lymphoma Research Foundation from Celgene Corporation, Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, Seattle Genetics, and Spectrum Pharmaceuticals. And I really want to thank them for their support of our program today. Now, I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the information you received from Cancer Care about the program today. And in that information, there is information about our speakers and the topics they'll be addressing. There is information about all of those different organizations as collaborating resources that you can access for support. They all have an 800 number and website that you can turn to if you should need some additional assistance. And also, there is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment at the conclusion of today's program and complete that evaluation form. You are our best experts to tell us the type of programs you'd like us to offer, and particularly the topics. This particular topic on T-cell lymphoma is one that many of you have requested, and so we've worked together with the Lymphoma Research Foundation to make that possible. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Stephen Hurwitz, and Dr. Hurwitz is Associate Attending Physician, Lymphoma Service, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Hurwitz is going to address an overview of T-cell lymphoma, including mycosis fungoides, current treatment options, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Hurwitz.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here. Today I'm just going to go over some of the basics in terms of really understanding some of the terminology, which can be fairly complex, and also talk about some of the treatment options, how to think about treatment choices, and then some suggestions on communication or questions to talk to your doctor about. So to start off, T-cell lymphomas, just the terminology can be really confusing. We have terms like PTCL or peripheral T-cell lymphoma, CTCL or cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. But sort of to start very basic, lymphomas are cancers of a kind of white blood cell called the lymphocyte. And if one of those white blood cells becomes a cancer, we call that a lymphoma. In the current classification systems, there's more than 60 different kinds of lymphoma and more than 20 subtypes of T-cell lymphoma. So really even just understanding that something's a T-cell lymphoma still puts you in a pretty big basket of categories. Normal T-cells are either B-cells or T-cells or NK cells, and therefore if a normal B-cell becomes a lymphoma, we call that a B-cell lymphoma. A normal T-cell becomes a lymphoma, we call that a T-cell lymphoma. So once you kind of have that, then you can kind of start looking at what are the basic subtypes or the very specific names. So we have this term called peripheral T-cell lymphoma, and that's a term that really describes what we consider to be a mature T-cell lymphoma, or a T-cell, a normal white blood cell that came out of the bone marrow and then was in the body at some point and sort of learned what its job was to do in the immune system. And if that cell becomes a cancer, in the very broad definition, we call that a peripheral T-cell lymphoma. And therefore, almost all the subtypes of T-cell lymphoma fall under a broad category of peripheral T-cell lymphoma. So again, that's the name of the lymphoma that's talking about the cell where it comes from. The peripheral T-cell lymphomas, by and large, are what we call systemic lymphomas, meaning that they tend to be in lymph nodes or throughout the body, but they don't have to be. They can show up in organs. They can show up in the skin. And by and large, what we call the systemic peripheral T-cell lymphomas tend to have an aggressive growth rate, or what we call an aggressive lymphoma. And in that sense, when your doctor uses the term aggressive lymphoma, they're talking about a lymphoma that tends to grow on its own over months, not years, tends to make people sick, and if it really was not adequately treated or controlled, could become life-threatening. There's another group of diseases called cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, and this is one of the areas where it gets a little confusing. The cutaneous T-cell lymphoma really describes a group of diseases that show up primarily in the skin. Cutaneous means skin. And for many of those people, those lymphomas are only in the skin. In that sense, I know this is kind of confusing, but in that sense, the terms peripheral T-cell lymphoma and cutaneous T-cell lymphoma are not mutually exclusive, because peripheral T-cell lymphoma describes the cell that becomes a lymphoma, and cutaneous T-cell lymphoma describes a group of diseases that tend to show up only in the skin. Within that group of cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, there's a number of different kinds, the most common of which is called mycosis fungoides, and that's a generally slow-growing T-cell lymphoma, shows up in the skin, often like a rash, or could be a thicker lesion, which we might call a plaque, or even a nodular lesion like a tumor. And then there's some other types of T-cell lymphomas that show up in the skin, something called primary cutaneous anaplastic large cell lymphoma, something called lymphomatoid papulosis, and some other types. By and large, and again, there's always exceptions to what we talk about, but by and large, the lymphomas that show up only in the skin tend to have what we call a more indolent behavior, meaning they tend to grow slowly, they would tend to grow over years, not months, and the treatments are usually geared towards relieving the symptoms in the skin. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. So just to kind of recapitulate that, in the family of T-cell lymphomas, there's 20 or so different entities. There's a group of these lymphomas that show up in primarily in the body that tend to have a faster growth rate. These are sometimes referred to in general as peripheral T-cell lymphoma, and they have a number of different names. The more common ones that we would see here in the U.S. would be angioimmunoblastic T-cell lymphoma, anaplastic large cell lymphoma, but there's a number of different kinds. And I'll talk about how we treat those in a second. And then those are often distinguished from, at least clinically, meaning we think about differently how we approach them, what we do for them, from the skin or cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, which are generally slow-growing, often but not always confined to the skin, and usually approached it in a different way. Hopefully that wasn't totally confusing. It's a little easier with visual aids, but anyway, I can take quite more questions on that at the end. We'll get to treatment in a second, but first I want to talk a little bit about diagnosis. T-cell lymphomas are rare lymphomas, so we think there's about 65,000 people a year in the United States diagnosed with any lymphoma. Maybe about 10% of those would have T-cell lymphoma, so you're already starting from a fairly small number. And that means a couple of things. That means that the likelihood that the doctor who's making the diagnosis or the pathologist who's looking at the biopsy, even if they have a good experience, doesn't see a ton of these because these are relatively rare diseases. And we know that with these rare diseases, sometimes getting to the correct diagnosis is not that easy. So one of the things that I would want to stress is as you're being diagnosed or if you've been diagnosed with a T-cell lymphoma, is to really try to make sure that your doctors or the pathologists really have the best understanding of the diagnosis. It's not uncommon that that requires more than one biopsy because sometimes additional tests have to be done. This is particularly true in the skin lymphomas where sometimes multiple biopsies have to be done. And just if you're going through that process or if you've been through that process, it's really important that your doctors get to the right diagnosis, even if that requires some extra testing, because how we treat and how we think about your disease is really based on the best understanding of what your disease is. So diagnosis would always have to be done through a tissue biopsy. Usually a bigger biopsy as opposed to a small needle biopsy gives the pathologist more information to work with and give them a better chance of really coming to a good understanding. Moving on a little bit to treatment. So in terms of treatment, we can kind of, again, for a new diagnosis, split what we call the systemic or the peripheral T-cell lymphomas a little bit from the skin or the cutaneous T-cell lymphomas. And this same split would fall for a lot of non-Hodgkin's lymphomas if you're thinking about more aggressive diseases and more indolent diseases. So I'll start with the aggressive or the systemic T-cell lymphomas. These are diseases that, again, can make you sick, can become life-threatening, and usually the intent of therapy would be to cure you. And that would mean the goal would be to get rid of the disease forever so it goes away and never comes back. And that can happen with most of the subtypes of peripheral or systemic T-cell lymphoma. However, to have the best chance of cure, that usually requires combinations of chemotherapy drugs, regimens like CHOP, which is a four-drug regimen. Cyclophosphamide, doxorubicin, vincristine, and prednisone are very commonly used. There's a lot of variations on that, and those combination chemotherapies give people the best chance of getting into remission, meaning where the disease goes away and we don't see it anymore, and hopefully having the disease not come back. With the aggressive T-cell lymphomas or the peripheral T-cell lymphomas, when we compare them to B-cell lymphomas, they have a higher chance of either not going away completely or coming back after strong chemotherapy. So there's been a lot of attempts to look at ways of making the chemotherapy stronger, adding additional medicines to regimens like CHOP. These could be other chemotherapy medicines. They could be non-chemotherapy medicines. They could be some new medicines that Dr. Shustov will talk about a bit too. And really the goal of trying to enhance that therapy is just give a better chance that the lymphoma goes into remission and goes away and never comes back. And those variations on combination chemotherapy like that are pretty commonly done in ways of your doctor trying to get rid of your lymphoma. I think the other thing that is commonly done standardly would be to add chemotherapy at the end of the treatment. And this is often what we refer to as a bone marrow or stem cell transplant. And at least for the systemic T-cell lymphomas, there's some evidence that if you add strong chemotherapy at the end and do a bone marrow stem cell transplant with your own stem cells, that may increase the chance that the lymphoma stays away or doesn't come back. The data is a little bit controversial, and because these are rare diseases, we don't sort of have studies on thousands of patients to do that. To assess that, but it's a way that many people would think about adding more therapy, again, with the goal of giving stronger therapy to try to get the lymphoma to go away and not come back. On the flip side, with the cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, many times the approach is almost completely different in the sense that these tend to be the skin-only T-cell lymphomas tend to be slow-growing. They tend to have a much lower chance of making you sick in a life-threatening way. They can make people very uncomfortable because a lot of the symptoms of having lymphoma on the skin can be very bothersome. But they tend not to grow quickly. And in the past, when people have tried giving very strong chemotherapy regimens to try to get rid of those lymphomas, what they've seen is that often the lymphoma would get better, but it would tend to come back very quickly, and people end up having more side effects of the strong therapy because they have to be on it again and again. So in that sense, the approach for most people with skin or cutaneous T-cell lymphoma is what we think of as milder therapies, where the goal is really to get the disease under control, to improve symptoms so people feel okay, to improve the disease so the appearance is better, and then to try to give treatments that can keep the disease under control long term, and in that sense try to manage it much more like a chronic illness. So there's a lot of non-chemotherapy treatments that are tried for the skin T-cell lymphoma. There's a lot of skin-directed therapy, which for most patients would be the most appropriate treatment. This could be a cream that you put on or other medicines you put on your skin. It could be ultraviolet light that you expose the skin to. But again, it's this idea that because it's very hard to get rid of these lymphomas and because the strong therapies have side effects, you try to find mild therapies that can get the disease better without putting the person at much risk or much in the way of side effects. And in those sense, the fundamental approach to the peripheral T-cell lymphomas and cutaneous T-cell lymphomas is quite different. There's always exceptions to these rules. I think other things, so those would be initial approaches to therapy. I think if the disease comes back with the aggressive T-cell lymphomas, if initial therapy doesn't work or it still comes back, that's a setting where we often look at new treatments, clinical trials, and some of the new medicines, again, that Dr. Shustov will talk about. And there's a number of new medicines that look very promising for this disease. With the cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, if initial therapies don't work, it's usually a series of other medicines. Again, preference for non-chemotherapy medicines or just medicines that treat the skin to really kind of try to keep the disease under control and keep a person healthy and keep them feeling as well as possible. And in the cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, the behavior of the disease will really help your doctor figure out how strong the treatments need to be. So hopefully that part is fairly clear, and again, we'll take questions. I'm going to switch over to just communicating with the healthcare team. So I think whenever you have any illness, certainly a serious illness or a chronic illness, and particularly something that's rare, I think it's important that you really try to have open lines of communication with your doctors. I think from a patient or family member perspective, you really need to ask enough questions so that you understand the plan of the management, and I think in that sense really understand the goal of therapy. Are we trying to give very strong therapy that we know is going to have side effects because we think the lymphoma could go away forever and you would be cured? Or are we trying to give mild therapy because we don't think the lymphoma is curable, but we think we can manage it, and we're going to try to do that with a mild therapy that doesn't expose the person to too many side effects? I think this communication becomes really important, really, again, with all lymphomas, but particularly in people with the skin lymphomas. I think something to understand about that disease is often the therapies work okay, but not completely, meaning you can see the lymphoma on your skin. It often gets better partly, but not completely, and there needs to be an open dialogue back and forth with the doctor as to, is the therapy giving an adequate quality of life to where you're comfortable with that? And if it doesn't give adequate quality of life, what are the alternatives and what is the cost of those alternatives? And by cost, I generally mean what additional side effects would I take on by increasing the therapy? What would I hope to gain from that? And really think about your choices in terms of what treatment am I getting now and then what alternate treatments are there and what are sort of the pros and cons of those treatments. I think other things that's important to communicate about, again, with a rare disease is I think second opinions are important, and this can be a second opinion where you go to another doctor or a specialty center just to get another opinion on the approach to the disease. It can be your doctor talking with another doctor and just getting some advice sort of more informally. It can be having your biopsy results reviewed somewhere else, particularly if it's a confusing diagnosis or hard diagnosis to make, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page or you have the best understanding of the diagnosis. But I think in that sense, having the sort of courage to ask about second opinions or other opinions, I think you're very entitled to that, particularly when you have a rare disease like this. Those were my main comments, so I think I could turn it back to the moderator or Dr. Shusov for the next section.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Horwitz. That was just a very informative presentation. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Andrei Shustov, and Dr. Shustov is Associate Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology, University of Washington School of Medicine, Seattle Cancer Care Alliance. And Dr. Shustov is going to address new treatment approaches, the role of clinical trials, and quality of life concerns. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Shustov.
Good morning or good afternoon, depending what part of the country or world you're in. It is my pleasure to introduce you to new treatments for T-cell lymphomas. Over the past several years, a lot of academic institutions came together, tried to find new treatment modalities for T-cell lymphomas that we realized are a bit more challenging to treat than their much bigger counterpart, B-cell lymphomas. And it is not because we neglected these diseases for a long time, but we did have a challenge of studying this family of lymphomas because they are rare. As Dr. Horwitz pointed out, only 10% of non-Hodgkin lymphomas are T-cell lymphomas, and it was very difficult to do specific studies in these cancers. But over the past 5-7 years, a lot of academic institutions came together, and this resulted in very effective execution of clinical trials, clinical studies of new agents that eventually became approved, at least in the United States, for treatment of patients with peripheral T-cell lymphomas, both systemic and cutaneous. I will start with introducing you to a novel agent, pralatrexate, or sometimes called folatin. And this agent was actually developed by the team from Sloan Kettering Center and the institution in California, tried to enhance upon the activity of a known chemotherapy drug, methotrexate, that we used for decades to treat multiple cancers. And researchers were looking into enhancing the activity of methotrexate, make it more effective to treat different cancers. And they succeeded. And when they tested this for multiple types of tumors, in fact, Dr. Horwitz with his collaborator, Dr. O'Connor in New York, tested multiple types of cancer being treated with pralatrexate and found out that T-cell lymphomas, for some reason, partially unknown to us, respond to pralatrexate better than other tumors. So this led to a large international study that we all participated in and treated patients with T-cell lymphomas that came back after initial treatment. Some of the patients received a lot of treatments before they went on that study, and some patients even received very high dose treatment and bone marrow transplant, a stem cell transplant that Dr. Horvitz talked about. So very difficult situations to treat, and we were very surprised, pleasantly surprised to see in the study that a significant proportion of patients responded to treatment with just single agent pralatrexate after their lymphoma failed to respond to multiple treatments combining several chemotherapy regimens. We're also very excited to see that patients who responded to treatment, some of them were able to tolerate treatment for a very long period of time without accumulating side effects like many other chemotherapies do, and therefore were able to remain on treatment for months and months and sometimes years, being able to stay in remission with just one single drug being treating their lymphoma. This agent then was tested in skin lymphomas, skin cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, and again, Dr. Horvitz was actually a main investigator in that study with a lot of centers participating, and we have learned that we could use pralatrexate for both systemic and cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, and many patients will derive significant benefit. The main side effect that we have to watch for with pralatrexate was inflammation of the mouth, similar to feeling that patients sometimes get with canker sores or cold sores and sore throat. And this is very transient, and when physicians know how to use pralatrexate by reducing the dose, manipulating the dose, this side effect can be successfully managed, and many patients will derive a lot of benefit from using this agent for their disease that failed to respond to other treatments. The second agent that we recently tested and that was approved for use in patients with relapsed T-cell lymphomas is romidepsin, sometimes referred to as Istadax. And the interesting fact about romidepsin is that this is actually what we call a biologic agent. It's not your classical chemotherapy drug that kills all the rapidly dividing cells. The way romidepsin works, if you think about rebooting your or restarting your computer, it restarts the tumor cell DNA. And when scientists looked at the cancer cells treated with romidepsin, they found out that a lot of genes in tumor cells that are responsible for cancer development are getting turned off, and a lot of genes that are responsible for tumor cells dying off are being turned on. So by manipulating this gene activity, the net result of that was that many patients with T-cell lymphomas in initial studies responded to treatment. So similar to pralatrexate trial, we all participated in a large international study of romidepsin in patients with T-cell lymphomas that did not respond to a significant amount of prior treatments. And again, we were very pleasantly surprised to see that patients with very refractory disease coming back after multiple prior therapies did respond to treatment. And a remarkable thing about romidepsin was the fact that those patients whose lymphoma shrunk completely would stay in remission very long period of time without any additional therapies. And similar to pralatrexate, we did not see significant cumulative toxicity, what we call it, accumulation of side effects after multiple therapies. So quite a few patients were able to remain on treatment many, many months, and a few patients years without lymphoma coming back. And finally, recently approved agent for a specific subtype of T-cell lymphomas called anaplastic large T-cell lymphoma, brentuximab or brentuximab vedotin, and sometimes referred to as Adcetris, is a very interesting new technology where the researchers use the targeting vehicle or antibody immune molecule against a certain target on lymphoma cells to deliver a chemotherapy drug specifically to tumors. And remarkably, for this specific type of lymphomas, when patients who failed to respond to multiple prior treatments or whose lymphoma came back after initial treatment, including some patients that lymphoma came back after bone marrow transplant, almost all of them responded to the therapy, and more than half the patients' lymphoma completely shrunk or went away. So we have seen significant benefit in patients, again, that who have lymphoma that came back multiple times. And based on the results of those studies, all three agents, pralatrexate, romidepsin, and brentuximab, were all approved to be used in the United States, the first two for all the T-cell lymphomas that came back or didn't respond to treatment, and brentuximab for specific type of lymphoma called anaplastic large T-cell lymphoma. So I think in the past 5 years, we've made significant headways in terms of finding new treatment, finding new agents for T-cell lymphomas. And this paves the way for me to discuss clinical trials, because once the drugs get approved, we really want to gain on the initial knowledge, initial advances of our research, and take these agents further. Clinical trials are very important in treatment of a lot of medical problems, specifically cancer. So we know this because we learned from our pediatric colleagues that majority of kids participate in clinical trials, and our pediatric colleagues are way ahead of us curing a lot of cancers. So we are trying in adult oncology to adopt the same strategy and treat as many patients as possible in clinical trials. There are pros and cons of participating in clinical studies. For patients with rare lymphomas or rare diseases like peripheral T-cell lymphomas, I think it is even more important because the standards of care are not well established. So being on the front line of clinical research not only benefits the research and physicians who try to find out new treatments, but also patients, because you have a chance of receiving potentially very useful and very effective therapy a long time before this therapy gets approved. There is a long process between studying, investigating the drug, doing clinical trials, analyzing the study results, and then regulatory approvals. So we're talking about years of hard work of investigators and physicians. On the clinical trials, patients have a chance of receiving these treatments way before the drug makes its way through all the steps of approval. Now, there are also some disadvantages of participating in study. First of all, when you're signing up for the clinical trial, neither you nor your physicians know the full extent of possible side effects of new agents that can arise during the study or even after the drug is being released. So we take a specific precautions and extra care of patients in studies and try to monitor those side effects. In addition, we also don't know whether the drug will be beneficial and whether the drug will become effective treatment for T-cell lymphoma. So after going through all the hassles of signing up for the clinical trials, all the paperwork, and potentially traveling to treatment centers that do clinical trials, at the end it might not be effective. However, I think personally that the advantages of being a clinical study, especially with rare disease, where we're still learning what is the best way to cure the lymphoma, provides significantly more benefit than disadvantages. And the clinical trial approach, in my opinion, is the best way to treat peripheral T-cell lymphomas. And all these three agents that I just mentioned to you, pralatrexate, remdesivir, and brentuximab, have moved into the another wave of clinical trials where we try to bring these agents, knowing the activity, into the what we call frontline treatment, where knowing that this drug is effective, we don't wait for lymphoma to relapse, but bring this benefit to patients with newly diagnosed disease. However, these drugs are not approved yet to use in a newly diagnosed patient, so the only way you can potentially harness the benefit of this drug at the time of diagnosis is participation in studies. The decision about clinical trial is a very difficult one, so you would have to discuss it with your treating physician and potentially get a second opinion and assess for yourself whether the clinical trial is for you. But at least it deserves a special consideration for patients with T-cell lymphomas. Finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about quality of life going through treatment with lymphoma. It is not that specific to T-cell lymphomas, but in general for cancer care. And quality of life is a complex concept that encompasses a lot of small components. First of all, side effects. A lot of treatments have significant amount of side effects associated with them, and many treatments are much easier. So I think that the most important decision in terms of quality of life while you're going through cancer treatment with your decision with your physician is to decide whether we have a decent chance of curing the lymphoma, or if the treatment is just palliative or controlling the lymphoma growth and trying to make sure that lymphoma is a livable disease. And it's not that small of a concept, because a lot of lymphomas are indolent, and we know that even with our best effort, we cannot cure the disease, but the best we can do is to make it a livable disease like high blood pressure or diabetes, where patients take medicines that have little side effects, control the disease, and go on with their lives. So it is very important discussion that you would have with your physician at the first encounter and subsequent encounters, whether at any point of your treatment we should really go through significant amount of treatments, try to cure the disease, or take the approach where we can control disease for hopefully a long period of time without you having to spend a lot of time in a hospital or dealing with side effects. In addition, quality of life encompasses a lot of other aspects that patients deal with outside the treatment center, outside the doctor's room, and this includes transportation to treatment centers, travel time, parking, waiting rooms, and the duration of infusions. And this is something that your physician and you would have to discuss at the beginning of every treatment, whether this is the best approach for you. And speaking of all of this, challenges that patients face, I would like also to refer you to several foundations for lymphoma patients that do phenomenal job helping patients outside, again, treatment center or physician's office. The National Lymphoma Research Foundation is probably the largest lymphoma-dedicated non-for-profit foundation that for years was providing a lot of help to patients with lymphomas with issues like education, advocacy, help with transportations, organizing patient forums to educate on specific type of lymphomas. For patients with T-cell lymphomas, there are two newer and smaller foundations that strive to be as LRF or Lymphoma Research Foundation. One of them is for cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, that does fantastic job working together with LRF to help patients with skin lymphomas. And the very young foundation out of the West Coast, T-cell Leukemia Lymphoma Foundation, focusing more on systemic T-cell lymphomas. Please refer to those foundations for any support that you need, again, outside medical decisions, outside treatment decisions, because they do a remarkable job helping you through all the treatments and trying to preserve what we call a complex concept of quality of life. I think I'm running out of time, and I will address other topics and questions if they come up. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Shestov, and that was very informative, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Megan Gutierrez, and Ms. Gutierrez is Chief Program Policy and Communications Officer for the Lymphoma Research Foundation. And Ms. Gutierrez will be addressing the free programs, services, and conferences offered by the Lymphoma Research Foundation. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. Gutierrez, and I have to say that the Lymphoma Research Foundation has played a critically important role in making today's program possible, both by in terms of helping to get support for the program, but also in terms of identifying the speakers and the topics. So I can't say enough about how wonderful that the Lymphoma Research Foundation is as a resource for all of you, and also in recognizing the need for having these type of educational forums. So, Ms. Gutierrez?
Thank you, Carolyn and Cancer Care, for our continued partnership. I would also like to thank our esteemed faculty, Drs. Horwitz and Shustoff, for taking the time to be with us today and for all that both of them do for the Lymphoma Research Foundation and people affected by lymphoma. I would also like to acknowledge Celgene Corporation, Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, Seattle Genetics, and Spectrum Pharmaceuticals for supporting today's call. The Lymphoma Research Foundation is the nation's largest nonprofit organization devoted exclusively to funding lymphoma research and providing people with lymphoma and healthcare professionals with up-to-date information about this type of cancer. LRF's mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by this disease. The Lymphoma Research Foundation invests millions of dollars each year to combat lymphoma and assist those whose lives have been affected by a lymphoma diagnosis. The foundation remains dedicated to identifying a cure through an aggressively funded research program and to helping members of the lymphoma community by providing comprehensive disease-specific programs and services. To date, the Lymphoma Research Foundation has funded $54 million in lymphoma-specific research, and more than 60,000 people are served each year by Lymphoma Research Foundation programs. LRF provides a comprehensive series of programs and services for people dealing with a T-cell lymphoma diagnosis and their caregivers. These include the Lymphoma Helpline, where our professional public and mental health staff can assist you in your search for information, resources, and other support. A clinical trials information service to assist you in your search for clinical trials. The Lymphoma Support Network, which is a national one-to-one peer support program that matches lymphoma patients or caregivers with volunteers who have had a similar lymphoma-related experience. Print and web-based publications and newsletters, which include comprehensive disease guides, disease-specific fact sheets, and informational e-newsletters. Lymphoma.org, which is the Lymphoma Research Foundation's website, provides information on a wide variety of education and support topics. From the website, you can also find webcasts and podcasts, which are available on specific types of lymphoma, treatment options, and other support topics. You can also link directly to LRF's YouTube channel, where we have a number of video interviews with experts in the field of T-cell lymphoma, including Dr. Horwitz, that are very informative. LRF also offers in-person patient education conferences on the local, regional, and national level. And last but not least, our new mobile app, Focus on Lymphoma, is an important resource. Focus on Lymphoma is actually the first mobile application for smartphones and tablets that provide patients and caregivers comprehensive content based on their lymphoma subtype, including T-cell lymphoma, and tools to help manage their diagnosis and treatment. The app allows users to record doctor sessions, manage their medications, keep track of blood work results, and document treatment side effects. For more information on any of these materials, please contact the Lymphoma Research Foundation at 800-500-9976 or visit our website, which again is lymphoma.org. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Gutierrez, for a wonderful presentation. And also, for those of you, many of you on the call are already in contact with the Lymphoma Research Foundation, but for some of you who are not, recommend them enormously as a wonderful resource for all of you for a lot of the different reasons that Ms. Gutierrez has covered, just all the resources that they can offer, the conferences, the materials that they have for you. Our next speaker is Maria Chi. Maria is an oncology social worker, and she's a clinical supervisor at Cancer Care. And Ms. Chi is going to address today the free psychosocial support services offered by Cancer Care. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Chi.
Thank you, Carolyn. As an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care, I'd like to talk about the emotional and social impact of lymphoma and how Cancer Care can help. When you're first diagnosed with lymphoma, it can be an overwhelming experience. You're faced with a series of choices and may not know where to turn. Talking to a Cancer Care social worker can help you get the support you need. Cancer Care is a staff of licensed master's level social workers, and all of our services are completely free of charge. We're experienced in helping people manage the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that come with a diagnosis. One of the most important things to acknowledge about the emotional impact of lymphoma is that it can be felt as a loss. It can be a loss that manifests itself in many ways for both patients and caregivers. That's why it's so important to have an outlet to acknowledge how you're feeling and to have someone to talk to who will be supportive and understanding. This can mean talking one-on-one with a Cancer Care social worker or joining one of our support groups. Cancer Care offers face-to-face groups in our local offices in the New York area, as well as telephone and online groups. These groups offer an opportunity to talk with other people impacted by lymphoma, along with the help of a Cancer Care social worker to facilitate the group. Participating in a support group can be helpful simply by allowing you to talk with others who are in a similar situation and who truly understand in a way that no one else can. Group members offer encouragement and a real sense of community that can provide you with additional support and guidance. Finally, lymphoma can have a significant impact on your finances, and for many of the people I talk to every day, this can be an overwhelming aspect of cancer. Cancer Care provides limited financial assistance to help with transportation to treatment or help with home care, child care, or pain medication. While we can't resolve all the problems you're facing every day, a Cancer Care social worker provides a listening ear and the ability to counsel you as you navigate the lymphoma experience. Many people living with cancer find this to be a reassuring and comforting service that can help you feel you're not alone. So please contact us at 1-800-813-4673 or log on to our website at cancercare.org for more information about our oncology social work support. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Chi, for a wonderful presentation about the services of Cancer Care, and we certainly recommend that people, again, take advantage of these free services as well. And now we have time for questions. I'm going to ask Sam to bring all of our speakers on board, and we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. And if we don't get to your question or you have a question after the program, I will give you phone numbers both for Cancer Care and the Lymphoma Research Foundation for you to call us if you have questions when the call ends. So, Sam, could you explain to everybody how to queue up for questions, and let's see how many we can actually take right now.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit your questions by clicking on the Ask a Question button. Our first question comes from Kathy B. Your line is now opened.
Yes, thank you, doctors. My question is, I was diagnosed with angioimmunoblastic T-cell in 2003, had R-CHOP, auto stem cell, relapsed, was on cyclosporin from 04 to 07, and then was off of everything. The same angioimmunoblastic came back this past July. Started cyclosporin, but because of deliberating arthritic symptoms, had to go off it. I have a pet cat next week, and we'll see where we go from there. So I'm wondering your thoughts on, I thought this was cured, but maybe it turned into an indolent, and what would your recommendation be on treatment?
Thank you for that excellent question. Dr. Horwitz, could you address that question in a general way, and then we hope that Kathy will take that information back to her treating healthcare team.
Sure. Yeah. No. It's interesting, and the story is a little bit unusual, but this can happen. We do, as you said, think angioimmunoblastic T cell lymphoma is an aggressive lymphoma in the sense that you would cure it, and if it wasn't cured, it would come back and maybe grow more quickly. And it looks like yours, while we would still classify it as an aggressive lymphoma because that's what we consider angioimmunoblastic T cell lymphoma, there are people who have much more indolent behavior, meaning that it grows slowly, it may not make you sick, and it may be easily controlled. So I think the decision to make with your doctors would be, is the plan to do a curative approach? And for relapsed lymphoma like you have, that often after an autologous stem cell transplant, that often would include an allogeneic stem cell transplant, which can cure the lymphoma but also can carry a lot of risk. And if your lymphoma looks like it may be maintained on a milder therapy that you could just stay on, there's a whole number of new treatments or old treatments, just regular chemotherapies, medicines like romidepsin or even pralatrexate. There are some of the new medicines that are being studied. Clinical trials would be options. So I think there's a whole bunch of options for treatments, but what you kind of have to decide with your doctor is now a time to sort of take on the risk and benefit of trying a curative approach, or if this can really be maintained safely, is that better to do in the meantime? You may well decide on that.
Excellent. Thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Diana M. Your line is now open.
Hello. Dr. Shustoff mentioned a foundation on the West Coast that's new, and I wasn't writing fast enough. I was just wondering, I got down T-cell, it sounded like leukemia-based word, foundation.
So thank you. We'll have Dr. Shustoff repeat that then for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan, for your question. So there are, as I mentioned, there are several lymphoma foundations that do a remarkable job supporting patients throughout treatment, after treatment education. And the big ones that I mentioned is Lymphoma Research Foundation, skin lymphomas, cutaneous lymphoma foundation. The one you're asking specifically is a very new foundation on the West Coast. It's called T-Cell Leukemia Lymphoma Foundation, or TCLLF. T-Cell Leukemia Lymphoma Foundation.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay. We have a question from one of our online participants, from Jane, and the question is, how common is it to have T-cell cutaneous lymphoma along with B-cell follicular lymphoma? How are they managed if they are both present, if they're both present in the same person? Dr. Horwitz, did you want to address that in a general way, just so Jane can take this back to a treating healthcare team, just any general guidelines?
Sure, yeah. It's interesting. People can certainly have more than one thing. We don't know that the risk is increased at all, so B-cell follicular lymphoma is fairly common in terms of lymphomas. Cutaneous T-cell lymphoma is uncommon, so it doesn't happen that often, but it definitely happens, and as best we know, they're not associated with each other, with the possible exception of something called chronic lymphocytic leukemia, which is a very slow-growing B-cell lymphoma that some people believe, though it's not clear, may have an increased risk of developing cutaneous T-cell lymphoma or vice versa. But in general, both of those are indolent lymphomas. Both of them may or may not need treatment depending on what symptoms they're causing. And I would sort of address them separately if they're both very mild, meaning skin lymphoma, cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, if it's not bad, you probably would do skin-directed therapy, creams or ointments or phototherapy, meaning light treatment, and that probably would have no effect, good or bad, on the B-cell lymphoma. if you did need a systemic treatment for one or the other, there are chemotherapies and things like that that could treat both, but it would have to be a specific situation where both of them needed a chemotherapy treatment where you might treat one with the other, but probably by and large they would be approached separately.
Excellent. Thank you. And our next question, Sam, one of our telephone participants.
Yes, our next question comes from Richard H. Your line is now open.
Yes, could you ask Dr. Shustov to spell out those three treatments he talked about? I couldn't get the spelling of each treatment.
Okay, thank you. That's often a question. And so, Dr. Shustov, if you could help with that would be very helpful.
Sure. Thank you, Richard. The three new agents that were approved to treat patients with T-cell lymphomas when they relapse that I talked about today are pralatrexate, P-R-A-L-A-T-R-E-X-A-T-E, pralatrexate. The next one is romidepsin, R-O-M-I-D-E-P-S-I-N. And the last one, for specific type of T-cell lymphoma, it's very important for anaplastic large T-cell lymphoma, it is called brentuximab, or B-R-E-N-T-U-X-I-M-A-B.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's very helpful to our participants. And and if anyone else has other questions like that, please let us know. So we have a question from Angela. What are the side effects of taking the light treatments for T-cell lymphoma? Does a person have to take light treatments? Dr. Horwitz, could you address that?
Sure. So light treatments, what we call phototherapy, there's a couple of different kinds. There's something called UVB or narrowband UVB, and there's something else called PUVA, which is you take a pill and get UVA. And basically, there's different ways of doing this, but you stand in a small booth or stand in front of a panel and expose your skin to ultraviolet light. And for skin T-cell lymphomas, where the lymphoma tends to be at the very top layer of skin, the ultraviolet light can sort of function like a very mild form of radiation, can actually kill the lymphoma cells. So it's a very effective treatment. No, you wouldn't have to do it, but it's a pretty safe way of treating all your skin if the disease is in kind of multiple places on the skin and not inside the body, because it really only addresses the skin. So in the context of treatments for cancers, this is incredibly safe when we compare it to things like chemotherapy or bone marrow transplant. The chance of having a very bad side effect or a dangerous side effect, you know, is almost non-existent or very low. However, because the skin lymphomas tend to be chronic, people may get light treatment on and off over the course of their life. And then as you get cumulative exposure to the ultraviolet light, kind of like cumulative sun damage with tanning or burns, there is a risk of an increased risk potentially of getting some other kinds of skin cancers, things like squamous cell or basal cell cancers, much less likely melanoma or something like that, where the doctor might have to remove them or cut them out if they occurred. So in people who get that in the realm of cancer therapy, it's very safe, but if you have that treatment, usually you're seeing a dermatologist anyway, but it's something that you would be monitored for. And the increased risk of those other cancers really kick in often after some years of treatment. It's not the kind of thing where there's a high risk if you just get that treatment for some months or even a year or two.
Thank you. And we have a question from one of our online participants, from Paulina. Any new data on whether allogeneic stem cell transplants are advisable as an exit strategy for patients responding well to a clinical trial drug for aggressive T-cell lymphoma? Dr. Horwitz, would you address that?
Could you just repeat the question again?
The question is, any new data on whether allogeneic stem cell transplants are advisable as an exit strategy for patients responding well to a clinical trial drug for aggressive T-cell lymphoma?
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, sorry.
And then again, if you would answer that in a general way, because of course, and then we hope that the guidelines will help someone in talking with their own treating healthcare team.
Yes. No, I apologize. I thought that one was going to go to Andre. I assume, but when they say exit strategy, we mean cure. When aggressive T-cell lymphomas have come back, particularly after combination chemotherapy or stem cell transplant from your own stem cells. One of the only treatments that we've really seen time and time again get rid of it or cure people, have, by that meaning it goes away forever and doesn't come back, has been an allogeneic stem cell transplant, which is a way of doing a bone marrow transplant from another person, so you get another person's immune system. And that's a big deal medically, but it can be done and it can cure people. So if that's the goal and your doctors think that's appropriate and there's a donor of stem cells available, either a relative who has a matched HLA type or is an appropriate donor or an unrelated person or other ways of getting a donor, and you're in remission from whatever treatment, whether it's a clinical trial or not, it's a reasonable thing to consider at that point in time because that treatment works best when someone is in remission. So if that's the goal or the ultimate plan and you have a good remission to an investigational or a clinical trial, it's often appropriate to think about that. Because that disease has risk, it's a complicated decision that needs to be thought about. Sorry, that treatment has risk, whether you would then go on to try to move on to the curative therapy or if you're doing well in a clinical trial, would you just stay on that treatment for as long as it worked? But it's certainly an option at a time of remission to try for cure.
And we have another question from one of our online participants about, do you have any advice coping with sun exposure? Dr. Shustov, could you address that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that about sun exposure?
Do you have any advice coping with sun exposure in terms of living with T-cell lymphoma and just being exposed to the sun?
In general, the sun exposure, as we know nowadays, is not a good idea because of the risk of multiple types of skin cancer. And as far as affecting T-cell lymphomas, I don't think we have any data whether it helps to cure T-cell lymphomas or increases the risk of T-cell lymphomas. We actually don't even know whether it increases the risk of skin lymphomas. However, patients who are exposed to sun frequently report that their skin lymphoma get better. However, this is not it is not to say that sun tanning is a good idea because there are much safer ways of exposing patients to the therapeutic ultraviolet light. As Dr. Horowitz pointed out, there is so-called narrowband ultraviolet B light, and there is PUA treatment, which is much safer than sun exposure. So I would not recommend sun exposure as way of treating skin lymphomas. But other than that, I don't think we have any information whether exposure to sun helps or makes T-cell lymphomas worse.
Excellent. And a question now, this one for everyone, actually, because it's, do you recommend a certain diet or exercise for people living with T-cell lymphoma? So, Dr. Horowitz, do you want to start? And really just in terms
sure.
of coping?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we don't know that any specific lifestyle change, diet or exercise, either makes the lymphoma better or on the flip side, we don't know that any specific behaviors in general are likely to make it worse. But what I do think about this disease is it is possible that people with this disease would need to be treated again and again over the course of their life to manage the disease. Sometimes those treatments can take a toll on the body. So I think having a healthy lifestyle, I think exercise is fantastic, and being as fit as possible, while I don't know that it makes your lymphoma better, I think it makes your body more able to withstand whatever is needed at that time or in the future to give the best treatment for your lymphoma.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Shustov, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I agree with Steve that maintaining healthy lifestyle and healthy diet during treatment, after treatment, certainly helps body to tolerate treatments that are required to cure the lymphoma. If patients are malnourished or in a weak body state, it is difficult, sometimes impossible, to give treatments that are required to cure or control the T-cell lymphoma. So maintaining healthy lifestyle and good nutrition is very, very important, and I strongly recommend, at least at our centers, and I'm sure that Dr. Horowitz does the same, we have dietitians working with our cancer center that patients obtain recommendations on how to maintain their nutrition, and frequently it is not easy because of the common side effect of chemotherapy, nausea, and loss of appetite. There are certain tricks that our dietitians can tell patients so they can maintain their health during cancer treatment.
Thank you. And Ms. Gutierrez, this is a topic that many people want to hear about at your conferences or in your materials? And is that a frequent call that you get at your when people call the Lymphoma Research Foundation? Or Ms. Chi, is that something that we, in our support groups, we have people talking about these issues as well in some of our support groups in terms of exercise and nutrition? And
yes, absolutely, Carolyn. It's a common, understandably common question. Absolutely. People, I think, are really, especially nowadays, looking for the best, you know, care for their whole body. And in order to, as Dr. Horowitz mentioned, to strengthen themselves to withstand treatments or side effects or anything else, just, you know, taking a more comprehensive approach to their body. I would also say for their mind as well, you know, in a similar fashion, I think taking care of your mind and your feelings about all of this in terms of getting counseling if needed and a support group if needed can really help strengthen your mind and you know, help you better prepare for coping with all of this, all of the disease and the treatment.
Excellent. And we have a question from one of our online participants, Paul. He mentioned, you mentioned that new treatments, pralatrexate and romidepsin, can they damage the liver like methotrexate? Dr. Shustov, do you want to address that?
Sure. Very good question. Thank you, Paul. On the clinical studies of both pralatrexate and romidepsin, we obviously tracked all the possible side effects that can occur during treatment of those agents, and we have seen a smaller proportion of patients that had abnormalities in a liver function test. We did not detect a strong signal that there is a permanent liver damage, or we did not have any patients that experienced significant abnormalities in the liver test, and all of those abnormalities were transient. Methotrexate in general is also a fairly safe drug. It can cause elevation of liver numbers or liver enzymes, what we call them, but in most of the patients, those abnormalities come back to norm once you either reduce the dose of the drug or hold the agent and the liver comes back and you restart it at a reduced dose. So we did not detect a significant signal that liver abnormalities is a danger signal with those agents, but definitely it has to be watched, if, especially if you continue treatment for a prolonged period of time, for weeks, months, and sometimes, as I mentioned, we treated patients for years with either of those agents. Every time you come for infusion or treatment, we monitor patients for kidney function, liver function, their blood counts. But again, overall, we did not detect a danger signal that would tell us that this is a dangerous drug to use in terms of liver side effects or liver toxicity.
Thank you. I want to thank all of our speakers. You've just been an outstanding group of speakers today. I want to thank you all. I want to thank all of you who've asked such wonderful questions, both online and on the telephone as well, and those of you who've been listening. I do want to remind everyone that this is a one-hour workshop and that in planning a program like this, the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care recognize that you have many needs that go far beyond the scope of this one-hour program. So I do want to remind all of you that there are lots of services that you can access, and there's no cost to participate in these services from both the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care. And again, I just want to repeat the phone number for the Lymphoma Research Foundation, which is 1-800-500-9976. And for Cancer Care, it's 1-800-813-4673. So I don't want anyone to leave this call thinking that you're alone with a question or concern you may have. Please know that you have access to these organizations, that we're here to help you. And I want to wish you all a very fine day, and thank you all for participating.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes today's workshop. You may all disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.